During Robert Brogdon's Olathe Buick GMC clearance event, save up to 20% on new models like the 2023 Buick Encore GX or GMC Sierra 1500. View their huge inventory at robertbrogdon.com and find your perfect match.
Border Patrol is presented by Walker Medical Linen Services. Walker Medical Linen specializes in bed linens, towels, scrubs, and lab coats. Family owned and operated for over 140 years. Find out why hospitals of all sizes, surgery centers, and medical clinics trust Walker Medical Linen. Online at walkermls.com.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's say hello to Buster Olney. Buster, our baseball insider from ESPN. Perfect timing, I guess. We have you scheduled to be on the show the day after the announcement comes down, the press conference from John Sherman and Dayton Moore, that Dayton Moore will no longer be with the organization. Let's hear everything you have to say, your reaction to the news yesterday.
Yeah, so as soon as the news came down, I, you know, reached out to a bunch of executives, other teams, and asked them, wondered if there had been some buzz on the ground, if they are hearing some things about a change was imminent. And there was a ton of surprise, and people were shocked, quite frankly. I mean, that was the word that a couple of them used. One, because, you know, Dayton's been in that position for so long. And he's a person who's widely respected within the sport. And the other part that I think a lot of people were reacting to was surprise of the timing that, taking place in the last part of September as opposed to earlier, like in August, like the Tigers did it. And also just the fact that it wasn't a clean sweep, that the JJ remains and Dayton stays. What a lot of people, and no one was advocating that I spoke with yesterday for one way or the other, they were just surprised that if you were looking to make a substantive change, that you wouldn't philosophical change, that if you weren't happy with the front office as was, that you would just do a clean sweep and bring in a whole new group. So that's what a lot of people were saying yesterday. That, the assumption was is that if Dayton was going to go, then J.J. would go, or if J.J. was going to go, then Dayton would go. There is a presumption with other teams that this is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of massive change within the Royals organization.
Now Buster, a lot of the conversation leading up to yesterday, because, let's be honest, we weren't talking a whole lot about the Royals since the Chiefs began playing the regular season, but there was that article in The Athletic by Rustin Dodd and Andy McCullough and Alec Lewis, and it was not a good look for the Royals organization about what's going wrong with developing pitching. And then Dayton was on, before one of the games with Ryan LaFever, and well, he just said some bizarre things about, anyone that's an anonymous source, that's disrespectful, and he doesn't believe. It was all over the place, and then made some comments. It was not a good look for Dayton Moore, and basically challenged everything that was said. And it just came off like he was saying that the guys that wrote it were lying.
He was defensive.
And so that can't be, that can't just be a coincidence, because it did. And then J.J. Piccolo came out and made some comments with the Kansas City Star that were very different than what Dayton Moore said, and said, yes, we know that things have been heavy-handed as far as our pitching development. And it just and look, I'm not telling you that's the only reason he got let go, but I don't you think maybe that's part of it, the timing of it, because that was a very bad look for the organization, some of the things he said about that article.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. One of the conversations I had was with a general manager of a big market team, and he mentioned that article, and he said, look, it's so funny. He said, if you know, you have an article like that land in a big market, then it's just another day.
Right.
Criticism. And, you know, this person said, it doesn't, that sort of story, you know, he said, I've got to the point where I don't even read them anymore. That, you know, just because it's constant. But he said it's going to land differently if you're in a smaller market like Kansas City, because there's not a lot of that criticism. There's not a lot of that evaluation where, and so he absolutely believes that, you know, the timing of everything that happened last week is tied to that piece, that was the first domino to go, or I should say the second domino, because obviously the piece is written based on the Royals' inability to develop pitching, and the reaction to it. He said that was sort of classic small market, where it resonated clearly, and the reaction resonated, and not in a positive way.
Nate Buchady.
Well, I mean, Buster, I know that you'll be baffled by this, but I said this yesterday on the show. I've had arguments with some people that have worked in this regime with the Royals for years who have said that this is a tough media market.
Wow.
And, you know, and I don't know what's your reaction to that?
Wow.
Well, the one thing I would say, and I have seen this in various markets, but there are, you know, in a smaller market, one columnist or one critical person or one show can land in a different way than in New York, where, you know, it's almost like you've got so many people being critical that you're not going to stand out, and it's not going to feel like the punch is going to land, which is also, I think, goes back to what the general manager of this big market team told me. Like, it just lands differently, and so maybe, you know, if you're a talk show host and you say something that's critical, there's so little of it that it's just, you know, for folks in the organization, they might go, wow, this is a tough media market. No, it's not. It's just a different media market in the way that some of the stories and the comments land, just because of the pure lack of volume. Look, in the 94 strike, I was the only beat writer covering the San Diego Padres, and as the players were, you know, leaving the ballpark, Andy Bennis, who was the player rep, said, hey, why don't you come play golf with us tomorrow? Because I was like the only beat writer on the traveling party. I played golf with that team, right? With that the next day and the first day of the strike and wrote a piece around it. You think that was going to happen when I covered the Yankees? it just lands criticism, you know, media. It just lands differently according to market size.
And so are you surprised that it wasn't a clean sweep? I mean, look, we've had J.J. Piccolo on the show many times. We're excited that he gets the opportunity. But you had mentioned that some people were surprised that, and I'll be honest with you, there are some Royals fans, and, you know, reading through some of the reaction on social media that, okay, that's fine, they made this move with Dayton Moore, but not much is going to change because J.J. Piccolo has been his lieutenant and has been here through all of this regime, and so how much change can we really expect? So there is some built-in skepticism here. So what do you think? You said that, like you mentioned, there were some people surprised that J.J. was elevated and wasn't just a clean sweep, although we think there's going to be some more moves to come. How much change can we expect? Were you surprised that J.J. stays when Dayton goes?
I was surprised because typically it goes in a group. But I would say this, assume nothing. Because, you know, everything you hear about J.J., who don't know well, I think I talked to him on the phone, you know, a couple times. And so I don't know him as well as I know Dayton. But, all I've ever heard is that he's a terrific, front office person in terms of doing his job as he's working for other people, which doesn't mean he doesn't have his own ideas. And it might mean because he felt like it's been his responsibility to work for Dayton and to carry out Dayton's vision and work with Dayton in concert with it. It doesn't mean that when he's now sitting in that big chair that he might not have a completely different perspective on what's to be done. I've seen that time and again in baseball, where you have a you know, a person who's working for somebody else, and then they get the job, and boy, they do it differently. You know, one example, Mark Shapiro, for years, you know, ran the baseball operations for Cleveland, and then he moved aside, and then Chris Antonetti came in, and Chris was known as a great lieutenant and someone who worked in concert, and then he got into that job. And boy, he stuck his elbows out in a way that I think surprised people. So don't assume anything. We shouldn't until we see what JJ has in mind, because he might veer in a completely different direction. And let's face it, I think, based on the fact that a lot of front offices are now so steeped in analytics, that's clearly the direction of the industry. And I would expect that one way or another, there's going to be a move in that direction.
Buster, I will back you up on that, and here's what I will tell you. I do know JJ very well because he and I, when he first started with Dayton Moore 15 years ago, we just kind of this kind of thing happened where we started having lunch together every winter during the downtime when he didn't have too much going on, and we'd pick a barbecue spot in town and we'd sit for 2-3 hours and just talk, and it's been one of the most educational things that I've been able to do for 15 years, just hearing his thoughts on baseball and all these things. And John Sherman, when he spoke yesterday, he talked about the need to get closer to the analytics and all that. And that article that Steven referenced that we're all talking about, the big thrust of that article, and I've talked to Rustin Dodd about it as well. This was I read the article the right way, he told me. Is this disconnect that a lot of the players, the pitchers, feel they are not being armed with the technology and data analytics that a lot of other organizations are arming their pitchers with. And I've spoken with JJ about that at these lunches for the past couple of years. The organization has already taken some steps toward that at his behest. They clearly haven't taken enough for the pitcher's liking or for John Sherman's liking. But from my conversations with JJ, and I'm sure this is why John Sherman feels confident to go forward with him, he is actively in pursuit of more of this. And I think it's interesting, Buster, because he doesn't come from the analytics background, right? JJ was a baseball guy. He played baseball in college. He got into the system with the Braves early. But I'm telling you from my conversations with him, he knows that this is absolutely the way that you must go in baseball, and he's willing to try it. And I'm wondering how many old school baseball guys around the league are like that and understand this is a natural evolution of the game.
A lot more than I think people realize. I have, and you guys have too, you have conversation with some of the folks who've been in the game a long time, and they gripe about the analytics and they complain about it. And then there are other people who I think recognize that, you know what, some of these teams are having success with this information, and some people, they go into it with an open mind. They look at what the Rays are doing. They look at what, Cleveland has been doing, and they ask questions, how did they get to where they are? I've known Brian Cashman, the general manager of the Yankees, forever. I would have thought, him as an old school guy. He went to George Steinbrenner when the Yankees started getting their butts kicked by the Red Sox in the mid-2000s because he looked at what the Red Sox were doing under Theo Epstein, and he told Steinbrenner, he said, we need to catch up. And he had the humility to essentially say, I don't have all the answers. Theo, for that matter. Part of the mantra within that front office was, we don't know, and I'm not going to say the word, crap. Probably be a good euphemism for it. That was their working mantra. And I think that a lot, A.J. Hinch, you guys know well, former Royal. Now, he goes from the Diamondbacks working in the front office to the Padres and becomes manager of the Astros and then now with the Tigers. And he has a huge role in that organization. He's someone who over time has learned. There are people who have evolved, where they can at least look at the information and not feel threatened by it. And so everything you're describing with JJ, I think there are other people in the sport who are like that, and I don't think it's a coincidence that a lot of them have moved forward.
We have Buster Olney on the line. So, Buster, one final question before we move on to some other baseball topics. Okay, so from your view now, what is JJ Piccolo taking over? Do you think this is a team? I mean, hell, I won't put words in your mouth. What shape is this organization in your opinion?
There are definitely pieces that you can go forward with, right? You know, to see Brady Singer and where he's at, and you got Bobby Witt Jr., and you have some, you know, nice offensive pieces, but there's a lot of work to be done. They have to, you know, as Dayton told me when I talked to him, I think it was 6 weeks ago, basically, we have to develop a pipeline of pitching. Like, we have to get to that point, because when you look at the small market teams that have success, you know, the Rays, Cleveland, there's a common denominator with all of them, and that is that they develop a pipeline of pitching, because you can't buy free agents, you know? I mean, occasionally, I guess one of the small market teams will try to sign a Gilmesh, and you'll try to make that work. But generally speaking, you know, if you're the Pirates, if you're Cleveland, if you're Kansas City, if you're Tampa Bay, if you're going to develop impact pitching, or if you're going to have impact pitching on your roster, it's going to be because you develop it. And I think that, I'm assuming, and I have not talked to JJ since yesterday, but I'm assuming that that will, you know, be the absolute priority as they go forward. And, you know, they've got some pieces, but I think they have a lot of work to do. And then we will find out, I think, in the next couple weeks, what exactly, you know, JJ's vision is. As I mentioned, the expectation within other front offices is that there are going to be a lot of changes.
You know, Mike Matheny made some comments yesterday when he was asked about Dayton Moore being let go. And he said, the business side shows its face in times like these. And we all understand it's a results-oriented game. Well, do you think that means that Mike Matheny and his coaching staff is next?
I think what he's, that's the reality of it. You know, among the people who I spoke with, you know, and asked about Dayton, they were shocked and they were surprised, and yet their feeling was, you know what, after X number of years of struggling, anything's on the table. And I think that's probably the same with Mike and his staff, that when you have a team that struggled as much and it did not seem to make progress, then changes are going to be made. And I think most people in baseball understand that. If you've got problems and you're not winning ball games, and you know you're looking at the, you know, the Cleveland, you know, consistently competing, you're looking you know at other franchises around baseball and they're getting better and you're not, then I think everything's probably on the table.
Nate Buchady.
So Buster, you mentioned that the people you talked to were surprised by the timing of it, and that they're expecting, you know, a lot more changes maybe in the next couple of weeks. What does the timing of that typically look like? And I guess is this the type of thing where if you're JJ Piccolo, you just, I mean, the season's going to be over here in a, you know, what, less than a couple of weeks? Do you wait till it's over and then start to make the moves? You just formulate your game plan over the next 2 weeks. Like, what is the timing look like for those moves if you're JJ Piccolo right now?
Yeah, I feel like that the best situations that I've seen in the, you know, under these circumstances, you know, if JJ has moves that he already knows he's going to make, I think the best thing is to go to that person and essentially, especially if it's someone on the major league staff, and say, look, this is what our plan is. You know, how do you want to handle this going forward? You do have, you know, 2 weeks worth of games left, but if, you know, someone you go to says, you know what, I'd like to finish the season, I have respect for them, you can do that. I also think you can make the announcement. You know, Nate Buchady and I have agreed that he's going to move on out of the organization at the end of the regular season, and we'll finish up this year and handle it that way, as opposed to, or if the person says, look, you know what? If you don't see me as part of the future, I'm ready to go to the house. And you say, okay. Because you've got other people in the organization, other people chain of command who could step in for the last 2 weeks and ride out the, you know, ride it out. But I don't really see a purpose for it being served to have everyone wondering when and if an axe is going to fall. That doesn't seem positive to me. You might as well go through, if you know that there's specific changes you want to make, then affect them whether or not the person leaves their job today or in 2 weeks.
Buster Olney from ESPN is our guest. All right, Buster, we got a few minutes left to talk about some of the baseball topics. One of my favorite things now to look for on Twitter are Yankees fans arguing with the rest of the world about who should be the MVP, Aaron Judge or Ohtani. Let me tell you something. Not just because he's on my rotisserie team, the Bada Bings, but Aaron Judge and what he's done is just every week it changes. It's like it's even more remarkable. But the same thing can be said for Ohtani. What a fabulous race this is. There is no wrong answer. But he has 60 now. He could win the Triple Crown, which I know some analytics guys turn their nose up. I still am super impressed by anyone that has a chance to win the effing Triple Crown. I mean, I guess my first question is, how much money did this cost the Yankees? How much more money did Aaron Judge earn? You started the season by saying he bet on himself. Well, how's that bet going to pay off at the end of the season?
Yeah, and the way you pose the question, you're presuming he's going back to the Yankees. And by the way, a lot of front office people with other teams feel that way too. They're skeptical that he's actually going to leave. But I would say this. We don't know what Aaron Judge actually wants. You know, when they offered the $213.5 million in the spring, it wasn't, the conversation wasn't, well, you know what, I'd rather have 300 than 213, or I counter with 300. It was no. And pretty soon, when he hits the free agent market, we're going to find out, does he want 350? Is he looking for, something? Does he just simply want to be the highest paid outfielder over Mike Trout? Does he have a specific place he wants to go to? San Francisco. We've had the Giants on Sunday Night Baseball last 2 weekends. I can tell you the Giants are going to take a run at him. And I do think it, and I've made this comparison with you guys before, it's a lot like Albert and the Cardinals at the end of 2011. There's going to be an opportunity for another team to swoop in and give Judge a huge offer, and we don't know how disciplined the Yankees are going to be. I think they'll increase their offer maybe from 7 times 30.5 to 8 times, and I'm just making this up, 35. Or maybe they say, okay, we'll make you the highest paid outfielder, 37, which would be 296. But if some team rolls in with 350, 360, and that's what Judge wants, and that's totally his prerogative, I don't think the Yankees are going to chase it. But I do think Judge has made himself a huge amount of money because, my God, I what he's doing this year, I said on TV yesterday, to me, it's the greatest performance by any offensive player in the history of baseball simply because hitting is more difficult than it's ever been with the parade of relievers and the advent of analytics and all that. And to see this guy, in the second half batting over 370 with an on-base percentage over 500, a slugging percentage over 800 with no protection around him, it's crazy. And yeah, he's the American League MVP.
I'm sure I'll miss some, but I'm just looking at the AL batting leaders. He leads in WAR 9.7.
Just say everything.
Right, everything. Batting average, on base percentage, slugging percentage, walks, home runs, ribbies. Batting average, total bases.
He's only sixth in strikeouts.
All of it. I mean, it's amazing. But here you got Ohtani. He's like, he leads the Angels in pitching and hit in everything. And he's like, you could say he's a top 10 starting pitcher. Would you say that in the league? I mean, he's just not a guy that pitches. It's unbelievable, right?
Yeah. I had Mike Trout on my podcast the other day, and I got to say, as I went into that interview, I thought, should I ask him, would he take Ohtani or Judge for MVP? And I'm like, boy, is that the ultimate no-win question? What a waste of time that would be. I didn't even bother asking him. He did talk about, Judge and how remarkable he is, and he talked about how Ohtani has improved as a pitcher, which is incredible. Yeah, he is a top-10 pitcher. And he's a top-10 hitter as well.
Right.
It's amazing. And he would be the MVP again if not for the fact that Judge is, as I say, if you want to draw a line also, if you say best offensive performance by any hitter after they started testing for steroids, I think that might be an accurate way to frame it.
Nate Buchady.
Well, they're cutting into every at bat now, Buster. You know, I mean, it's that kind of an event. I'm curious what you think of the way the country's is or is not reacting to this home run chase of Aaron Judge, and how big of a deal should we make it based on the home run chases that we've seen in the past? I just don't get the sense that it's the same, you know, captivity that we had when Barry Bonds was doing his thing or Sosa and McGuire were doing their thing. And is that just muted because of all of those times?
And what's the bigger deal, you think? The Pujols home run watch or the Aaron Judge home run watch?
I think Judge, you know, I have a mutual friend with Albert, and I said my sense is that Albert cared more about hitting 697 than he does 700. And this person said that's exactly right, because 697 meant that, you know, more homers than any player from Latin America. And that, you know, he passed Alex Rodriguez, and that was really meaningful to him. I think the Judge, because it's been, you know, 61 years since Roger Maris hit 61 in 1961, you know, and set that record. And it's been so long since anyone's challenged that. And look, I absolutely believe that, you know, the lack of complete enthusiasm in everyone enjoying this is some of the collateral damage from the steroid era. Because these numbers that were iconic numbers, you know, 714, you know, for Ruth, 755 for Aaron, you know, 715 when he broke that record, 60, 61, all those, they were iconic numbers. And then in the steroid era, a lot of those were muted down, where all of a sudden, you know, only a handful of guys hit 500 homers, and then next thing you know, that was doubled. And that's where we are. And so there are going to be some fans who feel like, and I'm talking about casual fans. Yeah, we've seen this home run chase before, and then it turned out all those guys were jacked up on roids. So I do think there is some of that. I do think people within the game are excited about it, and they're amazed by it. Look, the gap between Judge and how many home runs he hits and the guy who's second in baseball, I think it's Kyle Schwarber right now with 40, it's the biggest gap since Babe Ruth in the 1920s. And that's how Aaron Judge has separated himself from the sport and risen above the sport, which is why I think a lot of hardcore fans and a lot of people, executives, players within the game are so amazed by what Judge is doing.
Buster, as always, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Okay, guys. Take care.
That's Buster Olney from ESPN with a shocking announcement that Nate Buchanan is leaving the organization. I couldn't believe it.
Man. I know you've been trying to run me off. I didn't know Buster was, too.
I appreciate Buster making
that announcement.
We will move on. Back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchanan with Marco Marquez, now joined by Adam Kaplan. You can follow him on Twitter. Kaplan NFL is his handle. Adam, good morning. How are you?
Good, man. Did you have to use that picture from like 10 years ago? By the way, you just put on Twitter. I was about 40 pounds heavier. I'm down, you know, quite a bunch of weight, so I'm like, oh my gosh, that picture's so bad, but I get it. It is what it is.
Will you text me or send me new one you want me to use?
I need to. Oh, it's terrible. Oh my gosh, it's like I should have worn a bag over my head. That's some television in Philly. Comcast Sportsnet. Yeah,
I'm deleting it right now. I just deleted
it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I can identify with that, man. There's eras of my life where I'm all the pictures that you want. And then there's other eras, like the one I'm living in right now, where I'm like, yeah, maybe don't take a picture of me right now.
I'm good, man. I have a picture of you sitting at the desk with a nice pinstripe suit. How about that one?
That one from ESPN. Yes, that one. Okay. I know. That was one of the stock photos. when I joined ESPN in 2013 from the NFL Insider set. Yes, I do remember that one.
Okay, I'll use that one. I want to make all my guests feel welcome, feel happy.
Thank you. Yeah, it's just funny because I was thinking the other day, man, I have to update my LinkedIn, all my photos. See, I don't really wear glasses anymore. I don't really need to, but it's just funny how that works out, where you feel you look better than you did 10 years ago when you were much younger. Anyway,
let me tell you this. I hate every picture that is taken of me. It doesn't matter what angle, whatever. Every single picture that's taken is a terrible picture because I'm in it. But you know what? I digress. Let's change the picture. Let's get to the Chiefs. 2-0 Chiefs, but there are some issues right now to worry about because now they're down, it looks like, 3 important defensive players because Trent McDuffie's out for a few weeks. Willie Gay is suspended for four games. And now Mike Dana, who, you know, he is, you know, George Karloftis is the guy that's, you know, more important. But Mike Dana has been getting some starts, and he's part of that rotation at defensive end. With his calf injury, it looks like he may be out this game, and who knows how long. And so just tell me about the Chiefs at 2-0 and maybe how concerned we should be with a few defensive starters now looking like they could be out multiple weeks.
And also add Harrison Butker there. Look, the guy Amendola did a nice job last week. But, yeah, Butker's a big injury. You're talking about one of the best kickers of the NFL. Much stronger leg than Matt Amendola is filling in for him. So I think that's a problem. Dana is a part of the rotation. I think that's, you know, obviously that's a concern. And the Willie Gay suspension, let's not forget about that, because you know it's coming, okay? The Colts, no one's more run-centric than this team. And it's a Colts team that is reeling from last week's game. Too many guys out, which we'll get to in a second. They were terrible last week on both sides of the football, particularly offensively. They could not move the football. So they clearly come in reeling here. They're very lucky to have tied that first game. They were down by 17 points, and I give them credit for coming back. But this is nothing new for Frank Reich in 2018. They were 1-5. Remember talking to one of their coaches about it. Reich stayed the course. He didn't change anything. They wound up winning 5 in a row and 9 out of their final 10 games. They wound up making the playoffs in 2018. So he's always been resilient, and I never count out Frank Reich and the Colts.
So, and I understand you don't want to count out Frank Reich, and you don't count anyone out at just 2 games. But they've gone, you know, they've hopped from, you know, Phillip Rivers to Carson Wentz to now Matt Ryan. And I watched a big chunk of that game against Jacksonville. He just did not look good. That offense did not look good. Is there a chance that he just doesn't have it anymore and this may be different because it doesn't look like anything close to the Matt Ryan? And he was not that he was great in Atlanta the last couple of years, but be honest, he looks washed up.
Well, a couple of things you need to understand. First of all, they were without their top two receivers, Michael Pittman Jr. You might remember his dad, Michael Pittman Sr., former NFL running back. Pittman is a terrific young receiver in his third year, so he's got a quadriceps injury. He didn't even practice last week. He did a little work yesterday. We'll see what he does the rest of the week. They were rotating a left tackle. Matt Pryor was acquired by trade from the Eagles. He's a below-average tackle. He's better sixth offensive lineman, right tackle, left tackle, guard. That's a problem. They've got a new right guard in Danny Pinter, who they like. But he's also a new starter, so you worry about that. They have not had Shaq Leonard. He's come back from back surgery. Physically, he's fine, but conditioning-wise, he's not. And that's been a problem. He's their defensive leader. That's also an issue. They have 2 new starters in the secondary, Stephon Gilmore in the twilight of his career at corner. Nick Cross is a rookie safety. They also brought in Yannick Ngakoue from a trade with the Raiders. So they've got a lot of newness, and it's taken them a while to get things going, and that became a problem. So when we get back to Matt Ryan, look, if you can't protect him well, which they didn't do against Jacksonville last week, when you're without your 2 starting receivers, and they're not deep at receiver, that's a big weakness for them, it's going to be a problem, and it clearly was. And also, they couldn't get Jonathan Taylor on track, and it's because simply they didn't have the ball enough. They just could not get the run game going, and they're all about the run game with the Colts.
So we know a heavy dose of Jonathan Taylor's coming to the Chiefs. They got to stop him. But what about the Colts' defense against the Chiefs' offense? What do you think of that matchup?
Yeah, and they'll be good there. I think, look, where the Colts get it going, if Shaq Leonard could play. By the way, he took his reps yesterday, so he's trending towards being able to play this week, but they won't know until after Friday's practice. The strength of their team when Leonard is back, though, is their front seven, particularly up the middle with Grover Stewart, who's very underrated, and DeForest Buckner, who's tremendous, who came to the team 2 years ago in a trade from the Niners. Quiddy Pay is a former first-round pick, defensive end, who's got great speed. So you got to be able to protect. That front is really, really good. They get after it. Now, last week, guys, the Colts had the ball just over 21 minutes. And when you're getting ball control to death like the Jaguars did against the Colts, it's a problem. And you don't want to be that one-dimensional where you got to keep throwing the football. Excellent slot corner, Kenny Moore, one of the better ones. Okereke, number 58, is a good football player, good linebacker. Underrated. They've got a lot of underrated players on defense. The problem is, the pass rush has not been great so far. And Jacksonville did everything they wanted. They protected Trevor Lawrence really well. They ran it okay. Their defense got after it, as you were talking about. So Jacksonville dominated the football. See, the thing is, the Colts simply cannot move the ball in the air. And they're not going to know about Pittman Jr. Till later this week. And that certainly was an issue. And their offensive line's got some real problems. And by the way, Alec Pierce, who's a rookie out of Cincinnati, is their other starting receiver. He's not been cleared out of concussion protocol. He didn't play last week due to that concussion. So they got some things to overcome here. But you're facing a team at 0-1-1 that really should be 0-2. But they're dangerous because they're talented. They've had injuries, and they're not playing up to their capability.
Nate Buchanan.
So to stick with that defense for a second, Adam, I just came across a graph that was tweeted out this morning about teams playing the cover two shell. And obviously that was the kind of the running theme last year, that's what the league's going to more, and especially against teams like the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes, try to keep everything in front. Well, last year when he was with the Raiders, Gus Bradley, the defensive coordinator, went cover two less than anybody in the league by far. And now that he's with the Colts through just two games in the season are going cover two less than any team in the league by far. If you're wondering how it worked out for him with the Raiders last year, the Chiefs put up 41 points at Las Vegas and then 48 points at home against the Raiders. Am I oversimplifying it by looking at it and saying if he's going to try to play a single safety against the Chiefs consistently on Sunday, he's asking for trouble just like he was when he was with the Raiders?
Well, yeah, but his defense was cover three. It's interesting. Dan Quinn, defensive coordinator for the Cowboys, he stopped running cover three, and in fact, they apply a lot of man coverage comparatively to other teams. And it works. Now you've got Parsons, who's terrific, Tank Lawrence. You got to have the horses to do this. And it's going to be interesting to see because this is Bradley's first year. And sometimes you have to coach to the talent level that you're given. The reason why teams play cover two or two deep, a lot of the 34 teams do weren't running the Vic Fangio scheme where the safeties are deep. You don't want to give anything up over the top. Now, with the Chiefs, we saw what Justin Watson did. That was a great throw and a great catch. But without Tyreek Hill, I think you kind of saw, we should probably talk about this, you saw what life's going to be without Tyreek Hill. You're going to have to take what's in front of you. Kelsey's obviously going to be a major factor. You saw in week one with CEH more of a factor in the pass game. Those are the kind of things you're going to see. I don't know that you're going to see the deep ball as much because you just don't have anyone. And Juju Smith-Schuster is the shell of what he once was as a deep threat. Earlier in his career before Roethlisberger's right elbow went and shoulder, Juju could run deeper, but he's really not that receiver anymore. I think everybody knows that.
All right, so what's your prediction for Chiefs at Colts?
Yeah, I think the Colts will be more competitive. Now, the key for them is the Chiefs have to control that run game because you know what's coming. The Chiefs will win that game. I don't think it'll be high scoring unless there are a lot of turnovers. I'd see it something like 24-17, Chiefs.
24-17, and so the Chiefs are 6.5. They're 6-point favorites. So you, an uncomfortable cover is what you're looking for the.
Yeah, I mean, look, the culture, they'll be more competitive. Now the key is for them to get Michael Pittman back, and where I believe the Chiefs will have an advantage is their defensive front going against the left tackle, whether it's Pryor or Raymond. See, they're rotating. This is crazy that they rotate left tackles. And Raymond is a project left tackle. Yeah, they've got a real advantage. I think that's somewhere where I think the Chiefs will be able to get taken advantage of there, and that's because Matt Ryan cannot move. That's the other problem.
And now I see the Chiefs 5.5, so we will take the Chiefs and a cover. All right, Thursday night football: the Steelers and the Browns. Boy, was that an entertaining Sunday to watch football, and the Chiefs didn't play, so I got to watch all these games. The Cardinals, what they did to the Raiders was incredible. The Dolphins, what they did to the Ravens. But how in the hell did the Browns lose that game to the Jets? I still can't believe that one.
Well, the onside kick, the percentage of onside kicks has dropped so much over the NFL in a series of years. Yeah, they never should have lost that game. That was embarrassing. They're probably happy that this game is on Thursday, not Sunday, just to get it out of their system. Mitch Trubisky, look, he played decently week one. Week two, he did not against the Patriots. He's on borrowed time here. Kenny Pickett will take over at some point in the near future. They got to win. Look, if they lose their next two games, that's probably going to be it for him. And they got to find a way to win. This is a divisional game. This is a huge matchup. Both teams at 1-1. This is also another game where I see lesser a bunch of turnovers, not a lot of points. The Steelers don't run the football well. Their offensive line is very average. Well, I worry about the Steelers. Myles Garrett going against Dan Moore, the left tackle. They'll flip Garrett a little bit. They'll move him around. But the fact of the matter is the Browns should be able to bounce back. It's not great. Like, the Browns are not – without Watson, their quarterback, who won't be available until he serves his 11-game suspension. He's not back until Week 13 against the Texans. It's going to be a struggle to score points for the Browns with Jacoby Brissett, but they run it like no other. Their running game is incredible.
All right, I got a couple of matchups got to ask you about. What about this loser leave town match? Two teams that thought they were going to the playoffs, and I don't think either one of them are, but, man, the team that starts 0-3, you can just forget about it. Raiders against Titans.
Yeah, and this one is in Nashville. Yeah, well, look, if you just look at the Titans, they're all sorts of beat up on defense. Harold Landry, their best pass rusher, is done for the season with the torn ACL. They're hurt at corner. That's a problem. They don't rush the passer well at all. Derrick Henry's not got on track. He's the bread and butter of the football team. They got to get things going. And Mike Vrabel's been very resilient when they've come off of slow starts. And I was warning people, be careful about the Raiders getting the playoffs. I never thought they'd be a playoff team. I thought they got real problems in the secondary. Boy, is that held true. They were terrible last week against Kyler Murray. Murray, when he had to, got the job done. I'll take the Titans in this one in a tight one.
Man, get your popcorn for this one ready. Bills at Dolphins.
How about Tua last week? It's all about the short area passing. It's run after the catch. You've seen it. It's been incredible. Though, it's funny, when they've taken deep shots, the ball takes forever to get there because Tua can't throw the ball well past 25 yards. But that was an unbelievable comeback by the Dolphins. It's another game where they should not have won, but I give them credit. Two 2-0 teams. The Bills, despite a couple injuries, they continue to roll. And talking to them, they're hopeful with Gabe Davis, who did work yesterday. Well, they had a walkthrough, more or less, but they're hopeful that he'll be able to play this week. And they'll win. The Dolphins, I give them credit for coming back, but the Bills are clearly the better football team.
All right, another interesting matchup that we'll be watching, the Packers and the Buccaneers.
Yeah, this is a fun one. Boy, the Bucs are super beat up. They got four guys hurt at wide receiver. They won't know who they're going to have until at the earliest Friday. That is in Tampa. That certainly will help them. This is their home opener. The Packers rebounded nicely. They really need to get David Bakhtiari, their left tackle, back, that because the Bucs may right now probably have the NFL's best defense. And you saw what happened when Aaron Rodgers is not protected. He really struggled against the Vikings in Week 1. This is a tight ball game. I'll take the Bucs, but you know, you never know about the Bucs at home. Remember last year on a Sunday night, they got absolutely destroyed by the Saints. But again, if you just look at both football teams, I like the Bucs a little bit here.
All right, Sunday night football, Jimmy Garoppolo's San Francisco 49ers and the Denver Broncos, who, to be honest, so far look like poop.
Yeah, they do. Their defense is hanging in there. They got all sorts of problems on defense. Surtain with his shoulder injury. They don't know if they're going to have him, although they're hopeful. They got Simmons, the safety, who's on IR. That's a problem. You mentioned Jimmy G. Now, the Niners are already down two running backs. Jeff Wilson is their starter. They protect fairly well. Jimmy G gets the ball out of his hands quickly. You know, I like the Niners until the Broncos could show me they could get their offense on track, because they're so disconnected and disjointed on offense. I'm going to pick the Niners with a small upset here.
You know, last week, if you'd have told me I'd be excited to watch this Monday Night Football game, I'd have thought you were crazy. Now I kind of want to watch Cowboys and Giants. I don't know, Cooper Rush, because being compared to Tom Brady and the Giants are 2-0. So what do you think about this one?
You know what's interesting? I talked to the Vikings last year before the Sunday night game when they hosted the Cowboys, and they said he's much better than people give him credit for. And he put up 40 attempts in that game. He was terrific. They protected him. And he was efficient. He had a couple of mistakes, but they found a way to win. The thing about Dallas is their defense is pretty good. They stay on schedule with it. The problem is that they had trouble moving the football in the air. They need to get Zeke Elliott going. Elliott looked fine. They just don't have the ball enough. And the Giants, with Wink Martindale, the NFL's best defensive coordinator, they get after it. No one will blitz more than they will. Maybe the Bucs will, but that's about it. And, look, Barkley at running back looks great. That's not the problem. Their passing game is non-existent. They have seven receivers, but they have no factors at that position. This should be a low-scoring game. I'm going to pick the Giants to win in a tight one.
And Kenny Galladay's super pissed off that he's not playing, yeah. So that's fun to watch. Hey, just this final question here. Can we go ahead and make plans? I know you'll be busy that week. Super Bowl Radio Row when the Eagles are playing the Chiefs. You got to come on with us a couple of times during that week, all right, because that's going to be a big matchup for both of us.
Okay? By the way, is the draft is it in Kansas City, right?
Yes.
Where's the Super Bowl? I forgot.
Arizona.
It's in Tempe. Okay, yeah, it's State Farm Stadium. Yeah, boy, and the Chiefs certainly don't like that stadium, that grass, as we know. A couple guys got hurt there. You know what? Philly has got one of the best rosters in the National Football League. The quarterback's playing terrific. He's a dual-threat quarterback. It's really hard to defend Jalen Hurts if you're trying to go up against him. It's really hard. A.J. Brown's a difference-maker at wide receiver. Their defense, which really was poor week one, wow, did they get after Jonathan Gannon, the defense coordinator for the Eagles, really brought the blitz. They'll beat Washington, but it's kind of weird. It's the first of a two-part revenge ball. They play Carson Wentz this week, and then Doug Peterson and the Jaguars come into Philly next week. And then how about the Jaguars having their big win?
Yeah, that's right.
Week two.
Hey, go Jags as they take on the Chargers. Hey, Adam, thanks for all the great information. We will talk to you next week.
All right, guys, thank you.
That's Adam Kaplan. So, did you guys know that, by the way, Eagles Chiefs in the Super Bowl? So.
I mean, it could happen.
Make your plans accordingly.
Let's go.
I'm going to make a Chiefs-Eagles stitch jersey for that one.
Wow.
I was an Eagles fan as a kid.
Oh, really?
I liked them.
Who, like, was it a specific player?
They were my favorite team. Oh, Donovan McNabb.
You loved McNabb, didn't you? You and Petro.
Westbrook.
You know who just texted me now?
My mom?
Nope. My friend Danny. Wanted me to remind me that it was your birthday, because you'd probably be quiet about it, and he wanted me to surprise it all. I already got to him in the 6 o'clock hour, but since your father texted me, happy birthday, 25 years old. Now that I know that you're somewhat embarrassed about it, you don't want attention brought to it. Happy birthday again. Up next, Gary Lezik will sing happy birthday to you on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Andy? You like that, don't you, when I do that? It's Mayberry. Andy's frozen custard. You know, school is in full swing. I know, because my daughters are pissed off every day. But school is in full swing here in Kansas City, which means so are a lot of other fall events. Why not add one more to the list? You know, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to have my wife get us all in the car and make her take us to Andy's Frozen Custard. We'll drive to the one in Liberty, but there's 11 locations around the Kansas City area. Where else are you going to find world-famous frozen custard treats like these? That's right. Marco, for your birthday, how about the incredible new S'mores Jackhammer? That's what you're going to get for your birthday, brother. Listen to this. It starts with their amazing fresh vanilla frozen custard. Then they blend it with the most chocolatey melted hot fudge and the crunchiest, crumbliest graham crackers. And are you ready for this? I know you are. They top it off with fluffy marshmallow jacked right down the middle, just the way you like it. The quintessential fall flavor and the perfect fall treat. The only thing missing is the campfire. That is, unless you're sitting next to one already, huh? Yeah, that's right. What are you waiting for? I have no idea. Probably waiting for them to open. That'd be one thing. But stop listening to me rattle on about this delicious jackhammer and go with your family to Andy's right now. Wait for them to open, and you can get jacked right down the middle. Your new S'mores jackhammer is waiting for you at Andy's Frozen Custard. When you get there, tell them Stephen St. John and Andy sent you. Welcome back to the show. We have tracked down Gary Lezak. Gary, you better be on the show today. It's very important. You better have a clear voice because you must sing happy birthday to our baby boy, Marco, who turns 25 years old today, Gary.
Oh, my.
Can you believe it?
Yeah, it's just amazing. Are you ready?
We're always ready to hear you sing.
Here we are. All right, so I'm at Lexus. I'm bringing my car in right now.
Oh, bragger. Name dropper.
30,000-mile checkout. But anyway, here we go, Marco. Are you ready? Here we go. Happy birthday, to you.
What's going on right now?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Marco. 28th's the perfect age. He's only 25 years old.
What?
Happy birthday to
you. Oh, boy.
Aw, thank you, Gary.
How do people at Lexus feel about that?
How does it feel to be 25 years old?
The same.
You run a
Maybe
car
I'll
now,
hit
can't
later.
You?
Get a hotel room.
Go rent a car later.
Yeah.
You've heard about my, you know, about my theory of 28, right? So you're 3 years away.
What's your theory of 28?
Oh, you haven't heard his theory?
No.
Marco can explain.
Well, I want you to explain your theory.
28 years old is the perfect age.
For what?
For everybody. Our biorhythms, our physical and mental biorhythms cross and peak at 28. That's why athletes are always at their best at 28, 29, 30 years old. It's better than 27.
Garrick Dieter, so, how old are you?
I'm 29.
Was 28 the best?
Over the hill, buddy. Past your prime.
29 was all right. Hey, 29, though? Hey, softball. Softball, 29. That's the perfect age.
All right. All right.
It works. I mean, that's why athletes are always at their best. Think about it. Patrick Mahomes is only like, he's just turning 27.
So
he hasn't peaked yet.
No.
Oh, this is great. No, that's great news.
The peak is coming. Yeah.
When Gary told me this, guess who turns 28 this next year?
Nico.
Who's that?
Actually, yeah, that's Nico does turn
28. You don't know
Nico's
how old
your Alberto Mondesi.
There it is. This is what we've been waiting for. Thanks,
perfect.
Gary.
Finally.
You need to leave.
He'll have a new manager, a new.
He will?
Well, I don't want to talk to him, but I'm probably just speaking ahead of myself, but he'll have a whole new regime, put it that way. Well, maybe he might feel fired. What's his peak? What is his peak? I don't know. Oh, boy.
What's the weather's peak?
I'm going to work on that. It's cloudy. I'm out here standing outside. It's cooler. It's not cold. It's not cold, but it is the first day of fall. Fall begins today. This is when the sun sets at the North Pole. The sun sets at the North Pole once on the autumnal equinox, which is today at about 8 p.m. tonight. And then the sun reaches noon in the middle of summer. So we went from noon to the sunset, and then it's at darkest point on the first day of winter. And here we are, cloudy. It's raining south of Kansas City. The rain tracks south of us again, and it's getting drier. There's a chance of rain tomorrow. I expect it to be raining tomorrow when we discuss the Friday episode. All right? That's what I expect. For everything else you guys just talked about, the Chiefs are going to win by 2 touchdowns. You know, Indianapolis is really not good, and the Chiefs are just going to –
bye-bye. Bye.
Yeah.
So that's an easy cover. It's 5.5 now. Easy cover?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a laugher.
At least two touchdown wins for the Chiefs. That's my pick. All right, that's all I have for today. Right now it's 58 degrees on the way up to 63 for the day's high. Have a good day and happy birthday, Marco.
Thank you, Gary. We'll take a break. Up next, we'll have Gary Dieter in studio back after this on WHB.